working in the lab late one night, when my eyes beheld an eerie sight, for my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east, to the master bedroom where the vampires feast, the ghouls all came from their humble abode to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
Welcome to Our Weird World. I'm your host, John Henson. And decided to start the show a little differently this week. Look, I would like to tell you, I just, thought this would be fun and unique and just a, nice little change of pace. But honestly, I had no idea how to start the show this week. Just hard writer's block or broadcaster's blind. I'm not a broadcaster. Let's be real here. Whatever it is. I don't know, man. I got lazy. All right. Didn't want to do the cold open. And so just, Monster Mash is, I'm sure you've heard that song 800 times already this month, but did it again. So sue me. I don't know. We're talking about monsters this week, if you hadn't figured it out yet. Six different stories this week. The Beast of Bray Road, the Barden Booger, the Flatwoods Monster, the Beast of Bladenboro, the Skunk Ape, and the Lizard Man of Scape or Swamp. So a lot to get into this week, so let's go ahead and jump in. We start with the Beast of Bray Road. One night in 1936, Mark Shackleman was driving down Highway 18 near Jefferson, Wisconsin, when he saw a figure digging at an Indian mound. Now, we all know, you don't mess with anything belonging to the Native Americans, all right? Whether it's their burial grounds, their mounds, whatever. You probably don't touch it, right? But as Mark got closer, he saw that this figure was covered in hair and looked like a weird cross between a dog and an ape. Its hands were mangled with only three fingers and a twisted thumb. And the closer Mark got, the more the air around him began to smell like rotting meat. Mark kept driving, as he should. Great decision by Mark. But he decided to return to the mound the next night, hoping the creature would be there again. And to Mark's delight, it was. But this time the creature turned around and spoke to him, uttering the phrase Gadara several times. What does that mean? I don't know. No one really cares to explain that. And Mark was overcome with fear and began backing away because guess what? Idiot got out of his car and tried to approach it. But within minutes, the creature just disappeared into the darkness. After two more similar sightings, one in 1964 and another in 1972, 18-year-old Doristine Gibson was driving along Bray Road near Elkhorn, Wisconsin on Halloween night. Of course she was. In 1999, when her car jumped off the pavement as if she had just run over something. Gibson pulled over, got out, and tried to see what had happened, what she had hit. And she was mortified to see this dark, hairy creature barreling towards her. She jumped back in her car and tried to speed away, but the creature jumped onto the trunk. Fortunately for Doristine, for Gibson, when she hit the accelerator, the beast slipped off the back and allowing her to get away to safety. As soon as she reached town, she told everyone that she possibly could about the encounter. And to her comfort, or possibly her added horror, several people corroborated her story with their own encounters, most of which had happened over a decade before. Every report was similar, and that although the beast wasn't really any known animal. It was closely related to either a dog or a bear. Some people had encountered it mostly around Bray Road, where Gibson had been, but others were in their homes when they saw the beast. As word carried through town, an animal control officer reported that several animal carcasses had been dumped in a ditch along Bray Road in the summer of 1991, when a lot of these sightings had actually taken place. This officer implied that they had been used as part of a cult ritual, of course, which obviously then summoned this beast from the portals of hell to terrorize rural Wisconsin. He noted that the carcasses had ropes tied around their back legs and that they had their throats slit. The later reports connected the dumped carcasses to an abandoned house near Bray Road where occult activity had actually been taking place. Melted candle wax was also allegedly found at a nearby cemetery. And, you know, when you're doing a cult ritual, you gotta have candles. However, the site where these animals were dumped was quickly covered up, and the investigation into the abandoned house was mysteriously and inexplicably stopped because not because there wasn't anything really there to investigate, you guys, because they probably found some stuff, right? After Gibson's sighting in 1999, no other reports about the Beast of Bray Road have come out. And look, I'm going to stop right here. And I'm sure you picked up on my heavy skepticism of a lot of these stories. And as with most things paranormal, I have a heavy skeptical leaning because there's almost always a logical explanation. I'm a heavy logic person. All right. Some of these stories do have logical explanations to it, as we will see. This one, I don't know, who knows? Maybe it was Bigfoot or something, which is equally as illogical, but no one really knows about the Beast of Bray Road. No one really knows what it was. So that's slightly interesting, I guess, to a degree. But some of these other stories is just people being hysterical for no reason whatsoever. So I'm trying to suspend some disbelief as I read these stories. I'm trying to read a little more dramatically, but yeah. It's real hard to do when it's obvious that it's not that big of a deal. Anyway, our second story here, it's a very short one, but during the summer of 1947, a woman near the small community of Barden in the northern part of Florida was out riding her horse through the woods when she came upon what she thought was a tall man wearing a trench coat, which, look, normally you see a tall man wearing a trench coat, that's weird, but in Florida, probably not that weird. As she got closer, she realized that this trench coat was actually just fur, and whatever was standing there was definitely not a man. And when the two made eye contact, the creature sprinted off deeper into the woods and disappeared. Since then, sightings of the creature that have come to be known as the Barden Booger have been few and far between. I don't know why they called him that. Like, so silly. Most accounts say that the booger is more like a caveman wearing old and tattered clothes. Some say that it emits an awful smell. The lone consistent detail with the Barden Booger, however, is that it carries a lantern for some reason. I don't know why, but that's what everyone says. A local store owner began selling booger memorabilia and giving tours of the area for Sasquatch hunters. And while most people think that the booger is nothing more than a urban legend, just a character that people made up, others are convinced that it's real and could possibly even be related to the skunk ape, which we will get to here in a minute. But first, we're going to talk about the Flatwoods Monster. On September 12, 1952, Edward and Fred May were with their friend Tommy Heyer on a farm in Flatwoods, West Virginia, when they saw a bright light flash across the sky and crash into another part of the property. The group of three immediately went to the home of Kathleen May and told her about what they had seen. And within minutes, a posse of seven people returned to the farm to try and find the wreckage. And they ended up hiking to the top of a hill where they spotted a pulsing red light. Once they arrived at the light, they were surrounded by this nauseating mist. Eugene Lemon, a West Virginia National Guardsman, pointed his flashlight at the spot and illuminated a tall, human-like figure with a red face that was surrounded by this, quote, pointed hood-like shape. Later descriptions included details that the creature was roughly like 10 feet tall, emitted a greenish-orange light from its eyes, and had small hands with claws. The creature, upon being illuminated, turned to the group, hissed, and then glided toward them, which is, you know, pretty scary. At that point, Lemon dropped his flashlight, and the entire group sprinted back down the hill to try to get to safety. The next day, a writer for the Braxton Democrat investigated skid marks on an, quote, odd gummy deposit, gross, in a field near the crash site. People from all over the country, when they heard about this story, came to question the various people involved, most of which were convinced, you guys, that an alien had arrived in Flatwoods. And, you know, given all of the information we have so far, people saw a light, it crashed, they went to check it out, it was this creature, there's a mist of some sort. Makes sense. But in 2000, Joe Nickel from the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry, which is a group dedicated to debunking everything that makes people happy, he concluded that the bright light reported over Flatwoods in 1952 was nothing more than a meteor. That checks out. The pulsing red light was just an aircraft beacon that was flying over the sky around the same time. Also checks out. And the creature that they encountered was not an alien, but just a big barn owl, which also checks out, right? Because if you look at pictures of a barn owl, you know, it can have a pointed hood-like face. It can be pretty big, right? If you're shining a light in its eyes and it's got the night vision reflecting off of it, could be greenish-orange. And, you know, small hands with claws, and owls just have talons. So it makes sense. All right. Even more, a meteor had been confirmed, and it had sightings across three different states on the night of September 12th. And three different flashing beacons were visible from the area where the sighting occurred. So it makes a whole lot of sense here. The physical description of the creature, minus the 10-foot height, like I said, matches that of a barn owl, especially one that gets disturbed by a group of people. They get a little pissed off about that. The nausea and the perception of being in front of an alien were likely exacerbated by a heightened feeling of anxiety and hysteria. But here's the thing. Like, the people in the town of Flatwoods, they've looked at all of this evidence and are just like, nah, man, that was an alien. All right, an alien crashed here. We would know. All right, we would know. We're from West Virginia. We're smart. All right, we got it. All right, we ain't never been wrong about nothing. All right, so you just let us have this one, and you go take your science and your reason and your logic, and you just go take that back to the other Virginia, where all them Democrats are. Yeah, because we're just going to stay here. We got our monster. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to honor the monster, this alien that came to visit. Here's what we're going to do. All right, we're going to make a monument for it. All right. But look, here's the thing. I don't think we should do a traditional sort of monument. All right. That's overdone. All right, here's what I think we should do. Let's take a giant chair. All right, the monument is a chair. All right, now, hang on there, Jimbo. I'm all for building this monument here, but why chair? I mean, why not? You know, it makes a lot of sense. Does make a lot of sense. I mean, I was thinking, like, we replicate the spaceship.
Well, see, Jim, we never saw spaceship. We never found anything that crashed.
Oh, okay. All right, that makes a little bit more sense then. What about if we just have someone make a wooden replica? You know, cut down one of them big oak trees out there in the forest, and craft with their saw, a monument, a replica of what that monster looked like. Well, see, I thought about that too. All right. And the conclusion that I came to was that it would look too much like a barn owl. And we don't want people thinking that we're grateful for owls in this town, because we're not. They're pests. And so that's why I think we get a chair and we make a sign. We make a sign that says, "Welcome to Flatwoods, home of the Green Monster." And I think that's gonna work. All right, I like it. You do know that up in Boston, up at the baseball field up there, they have a thing called the Green Monster. Yeah, but people are gonna be like, I understand that, Jim. I do. But people are gonna see our sign and they're just gonna know. They're just gonna know. Have faith. All right. Have faith. They're just gonna know that the chair and the Green Monster is the Flatwoods Monster, and there's nothing else that it could possibly be. Right? All right, that was a long tangent. But all of that is true. All right, like, I don't know if the conversation went exactly like that, but that is what they came up with. So if you go to Flatwoods, West Virginia, you will see a giant chair on the outskirts of town with a sign that says, "Welcome to Flatwoods, home of the Green Monster." And I bet West Virginia people wonder why they are the laughingstock of this country. Like, it's insane. All right, anyway. For this next story, we're coming into the home state of North Carolina. On December 29th, 1953, the residents of Bladenboro, which is this small town, kind of in the southeastern part of the state, kind of between Fayetteville and Wilmington, kind of down in there. But they began noticing that their most prized possessions, such as their dogs, rabbits, goats, and other livestock, were just getting absolutely mauled to death. More specifically, they were getting crushed, decapitated, and completely drained of their blood. Eyewitness accounts pointed to a monster of some sort that was described as sleek, black, and about 5 feet long. All right. Police Chief Roy Forst, who is going to play a huge part in this story, he basically fit this perfect stereotype of a misogynistic 1950s cop in a sitcom. All right. Because here's a direct quote. All right. "It really upset the women. They were just wringing their hands, all right, fainting on their special little couches." All right, he didn't say that last part. I just threw that in. But another resident, and I kid you not, this is his name, Tater Shaw. I may need to take back what I said about West Virginia. But Tater Shaw described a dead goat that he saw as having a head, quote, "flat as a fritter." Sure. After being maimed by this beast, another man, Lloyd Clemens, actually saw the beast sneaking through his backyard, but couldn't do anything about it. Tater Shaw, still making great quotes here, he told the Wilmington Morning Star that his two dogs, Pee-wee, who he described as, quote, "the brown one," and this is the name, I'm not kidding, Niggy, who is described as the black one. Oh, you can't make this up. His two dogs were getting reckless and making a lot of noise outside. So Tater, he glanced out the window and he was, quote, "plumb spellbound." This guy, look, racist dog name aside, I love this guy, right? Might be my favorite character ever, all right? I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I need a recurring Tater Shaw character on this show who maybe has some subtle racism about him. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Tater said that the beast was about 20 inches tall with a 14-inch tail and had the face of a cat. But by the time he had been able to return with his shotgun, the beast had disappeared. In order to finally catch the beast, Police Chief Roy Forrest, going back to him,
He thought it would be a great idea for residents to leave their dogs chained to a pole outside so as to act as bait to lure the monster into the open. And so with this whole sacrifice your pets plan in place, as many as 1,000 people and 500 dogs spent the next week searching the area in and around Bladenboro, hunting the beast until the Humane Society in Asheville, of course it was Asheville if you know anything about North Carolina, they sent a telegram to Bladenboro demanding residents take the dogs off the chain because, I mean, that's pretty much the definition of inhumane. And look, I mean, like, Bladenboro, even today, is not a huge town. In the 1950s, I can't imagine it was very big then. And so 1,000 people is a huge chunk of this town running around trying to find this thing. A week later, a local farmer named Luther Davis killed a large bobcat. And at that point, Bladenboro Mayor Woodrow Fussell quickly declared that the beast had been killed, but several people quickly argued that a bobcat could not have possibly been responsible for such violent attacks. But that same day, a man ran over what many people said was a spotted leopard with his truck, which, look, if you know anything about North Carolina or North America in general, leopards are not really native to that area. People in the area, though, continued to argue that it could not have been a cat, mainly because several footprints found near the mauling sites looked like they'd belonged to a larger dog than, you know, the tinier dog that was in a bloody heap right there. But ideas began ranging anywhere from a panther to a wolf or a cougar or a wolverine or whatever. Although the beast of Bladenboro was never actually confirmed, the reports of pets and livestock being brutally murdered stopped rolling in after that bobcat was killed. So it's probably the bobcat, right? Bobcats, not so much now, but definitely up in the mountains, there are some running around. And so that's probably what it was. Tater, what do you think?
Man, I mean, I don't know. I could have been a cat. Cats are just pussies. Get it? Ow! That's because they're pussy cats. I don't think so. It's probably, you know what it probably was? It's probably Jamal running around, because that's just what they do. They just run around killing people. Not people, but, you know, animals and stuff. So, look. Segregation is fine. It's all right. But I think that's probably what we need to keep doing. I don't like all this equal whites talk. Equal rights. Cause it is equal whites. Am I right? Hey, now, am I right? Hey, yeah, there we go. Hey, I'm Tater. I don't know where that's going. Anyway, we'll probably get his opinion later. Now let's talk about the skunk ape that we previously mentioned. So while the rest of America is constantly focused on finding Bigfoot, Florida specifically is focused on finding the skunk ape because, of course, that's what they would call it. This creature, which is said to have the face of a man, the body of an ape, and smells like rotten cabbage, has allegedly been terrorizing Floridians for years. It began in 1959 when three boys first reported an encounter in the city of Ocala. On a different occasion, a truck driver sitting at a rest stop along Interstate 75 claimed that he was dragged from his truck and carried into the woods before escaping from the monster's grasp. Another girl was thrown from her horse by the skunk ape and broke her arm. In 1974, a driver hit a skunk ape along US 27, and when the driver stopped to investigate, the beast growled and attacked the car before limping off into the swamp. Police on the ground and in the air searched for signs of this beast, but nothing was really ever found. The most convincing photographic proof of the existence of the skunk ape came in 2000 in the city of Sarasota. One night, a woman spotted a large creature sauntering through her backyard. She watched as it came up to her back porch and took a few apples that she had in a basket out there. She was able to grab her camera and take two photographs, which surprisingly are actually not terrible. You can actually look this up. They're called the Mayaca photographs due to their origin near the Mayaca River.
But here's the thing. Rather than submit them to a media outlet or even make copies of them, like a logical person would do, this woman anonymously mailed the photos to the local police. The woman also provided a handwritten note saying she thought the creature was just an escaped orangutan and not the actual skunk ape. But these photos, these Miyaka photographs, have been praised by Bigfoot hunters as total 100% proof of the skunk ape, even though these photos pretty clearly show it's just an orangutan, right? 100% an orangutan. I've seen them. It's an orangutan. But hang on, you guys, all right? Tater. Yeah. What would an orangutan be doing in suburban Florida? Well, I mean, this feels like you're trapping me here, man. You're going to tell me that in the woods of Florida, there's a dark-skinned All right. I see where you're going with this. No, this is a family show. I'm not going to have your racism in here, all right? I'm sorry about that, all right? I think Tater's going to be suspended for a while. I just, you know, he's a liability. Can't really have that. Here's the thing, all right? Wild orangutan very could have easily escaped from a wildlife refuge, a zoo, a circus, or just one of the many weirdos who keep preposterously exotic pets in Florida and let it escape. So probably not a skunk ape or a Bigfoot or anything like that. Probably was an orangutan, but the skunk ape, many people still believe it is a thing. Our last story here is the Lizard Man of Scape or Swamp. Starts in the summer of 1988 when 16-year-old Christopher Davis was driving down a rural South Carolina highway when a green creature at least 7 feet tall allegedly jumped in front of his car. The, quote, wet-like creature, because leave it to South Carolinians to come up with just a completely useless and nonsensical descriptor. All right, Chris, what did it look like? Well, it was real wet like. It was real wet like. Yeah. I mean, like, how helpful is that? It's not helpful at all. This creature also had 3 fingers, red eyes, and a rough scaly skin like a lizard. The lizard man then clawed at Christopher's car, leaving dents and scratches on the hood before disappearing back into the swamp. Christopher's story immediately made headlines across the country, and the area quickly became a tourist attraction for people hoping to catch a glimpse of this infamous new lizard man. A local radio station even offered a $1 million reward for its capture, and local businesses even began selling lizard man shirts and other souvenirs. On August 5th, a man named Kenneth Orr reported that he had encountered and shot the lizard man somewhere on Highway 15. He even presented a few scales and a blood sample as proof. But Orr recanted his account 2 days later after police charged him with unlawfully carrying a pistol and filing a false police report. At that point, Orr said he pretty much just made up the whole story to keep the legend of the Lizard Man alive, because that's what we needed. Although several other sightings were reported for the rest of the summer, police casually just attributed them all to a bear, because if we all know things about bears, it's that they have green scaly skin. Mm-hmm. In 2008, a couple in the town of Bishopville reported damage to their car that they immediately claimed was from the lizard man. But blood samples taken from the car clearly showed that the damage had been done by a dog. Also, lastly, for what it's worth, Christopher Davis, who originally came up with the legend of the lizard man, he was shot and killed in 2009 over drugs. So, probably not a reliable source on that. And that will take us out of today's stories. So there we go. Monsters, at least some monsters. I don't know. We may have some more in the future, maybe next year or something. But yeah, I just, you know, look, like I said before, I am very skeptical about a lot of these things. Look, and some of these stories, you know, especially with like the Beast of Bladenborough, had very logical and clearly identifiable cause and effect. Some of these other ones, they're a little strange. You know, Beast of Bray Road, the Lizard Man, you know, was probably never real to begin with. You know, Christopher Davis was probably high. He probably slightly wrecked his car, and that was it. Or maybe he, like, ran over an alligator or something. Who knows? But, yeah, like, some of these just completely preposterous. But some, you know, maybe you're like reverse skeptical, and maybe you think, hey, maybe there is a Bigfoot running around Florida right now, you know, or maybe there was an alien up in West Virginia. Who knows? But let's, you know, you're cool. Yeah. Believe that. That's fine. Let's, otherwise let's see what we learned today.
What did we learn?
Number one, a lot of these stories would be so much more convincing if the accounts weren't so inconsistent or so spread out. Beast of Bray Road, maybe it's a thing. Maybe it's some demonic Native American spirit coming back after a cult ritual or something. Who knows? Or maybe it's all made up. I don't know. Number two, people in Florida, shockingly, think that there is some version of Bigfoot running around. Two different versions of Bigfoot running around, whether it's the skunk ape or the Barden Booger, which is just the stupidest name for a cryptid, for a monster I've ever heard. It's just not intimidating at all, but whatever. And then number three, drugs, man. You know, that's probably a big reason why a lot of these stories exist. Also, just the lack of critical thinking. But hey, they're fun, all right? We like to tell these stories, have a little fun, you know, think about all the what ifs. Oh man, what if there's something out there? That'd be pretty sweet, you know. But logically speaking, it's probably not. I have really put a damper on this specific Halloween topic. I'm sorry. We'll do better next time. Next week on Our Weird World, we're continuing our Halloween theme with stories about ghosts. This one, look, not going to lie, this one's a little harder to explain, all right? So I will be better next week and in terms of playing along a lot more because, look, some of this stuff, a little bit harder to explain, all right? So that'll be fun. Also, just as big of an episode next week, six more stories. You guys have told me you want longer episodes, so that's nice. That's nice of you. I appreciate that. So we are looking at the stories of Maria Martin, the Blue-Blooded Ghost, the Greenbrier Ghost, Old Book, James Chafin, and Teresita Bassa. And all of those stories are going to come at you next week. Fun ghost stories in time for Halloween. So that'll do it for me this week. Appreciate you listening. Keep telling all your friends and keep it weird.